Welcome to Hot Level Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres Dodgers haven't done this in a while. Just like Padres Giants just finished that. Here we are. 2 weeks. Padres Giants, Padres Dodgers. And then there'll be 31 games left in the season. Ryan, my head is spinning. Where would you like to start?
I'd like to start with the Giants. If only the Padres and Giants could play every night, the Padres might win the West. It was a strange series, I thought, Kevin. Four-game series, that always throws me off, especially when it's in the middle of the week. Padres looked sort of objectively awful in their first game, better in games two and three. And then, as you wrote about today, in yesterday's game four, the Padres were sloppy and ugly and, you know, trying to give the game away early until they rallied and then ended up beating the Giants in a little bit of a laugher. What have we learned about them in the last 4 days, and specifically about their ability to win when they're not playing well?
Yeah, and I think that might be your last part, might be the part that I would say that's what I've learned about them. Like, I don't think the Padres are overwhelming me now, and maybe that's a good thing, right? Like when they're winning every single night, like, you know, or early in the season, and maybe it can get lost, like the other team's playing poorly, or the pitcher shoved and so they won 2-0, or they whatever factors are, and we can kind of not know who they are. Well, like, they're on their way to 90 wins. We can trust that even a game like yesterday, where they didn't play well for a while, right? Should we really just say it was just one inning? It was really ugly, yeah, one inning.
Yeah, okay. A terrible one inning. Yes.
Right. And so that then, like, you're still not, when that happened, is like, okay, well, like, they also have Justin Verlander kind of on the ropes for a guy who's retired everybody, because they're seeing a lot of pitches. He's not overpowering. Could this get out of hand? Could that two runs that they gave the Giants bite them? Sure, absolutely. But, like, no, I think this lineup now is going to be fine. And as long as Dylan Cease doesn't implode, which he hadn't, wasn't his fault, those two runs, he'll be fine. And they'll get it to the bullpen. And there's that sort of, my point is, like, there's that sort of confidence about the team now. That's what I think, right? That doesn't mean I think they're going to win the World Series or that they're not capable of, you know, four losses in a row. but that's what I think they've shown us, is that they have the ability to win a lot of different ways. Now, I've got concerns we can get into if you would like. I won't tell you. You can read my mind. I've got concerns about this team, but that's my answer about what have I learned about them.
Yep, absolutely. And, of course, it helps when you have an all-star starter who can come into the starting lineup with Jackson Merrill injured. Let's talk about Ryan O'Hearn a little bit. He was sort of the big topic on Twitter this week. Kevin, I don't want to bring Twitter up on the podcast again, but there's a lot of, hey, why isn't this guy starting? Why isn't this against lefties? Why isn't this guy playing more? He steps in with Jackson Merrill injured and has just been raking for them. What does he bring to this team, and how important is it to have that depth at this point in the season?
This is, like, to me, he was the key pickup, and I said it at the time, in terms of it showed the Padres were, and AJ Preller was looking to fill every possible hole. Like, will we need Ryan O'Hearn, or do we need Ryan O'Hearn and Gavin Sheets? Maybe. And turns out, yeah. Now, you can debate, should Ryan O'Hearn have played a little more? Look, it ain't my fault if people don't want to read and comprehend. And so I used to think, oh, they just don't read. No, now I know that based on some conversations with people, they do read, they just don't want to believe or comprehend. Ryan O'Hearn was playing almost every day. Now, there was some thought inside, there's thought outside. Maybe he could have played a game or more too, or started a game or more. Maybe he should have been this pinch hitter, that one. But he was playing a lot. Ryan O'Hearn said it himself, didn't start off very well. Like, hit a big home run against the lefty in Arizona, big double against the Dodgers. And it was the proverbial, just perpetual shiny object or thing we don't have that will definitely be better. Now, here's the thing that everybody who was clamoring for Ryan O'Hearn. And look, I was asking the question. I don't clamor, but I ask. Everybody now gets to go, see, told you so, because Ryan O'Hearn has come through. What we forget is all the times we clamored and the guy we clamored for wasn't any better than the guy that was in there. So, you know, look, they have a lot of players, and it was clear from the start. The beauty of what I do, what you do, what fans do, is we get to clamor and question. Mm-hmm. Mike Schilt's job, the staff's job, Preller's job is to make all the pieces fit, and they're not going to do a perfect job. If you've got a bunch of pieces and they're going to second guess themselves all the time, like, dang it, man, should have done this maybe, or should have done this. Look, Gavin Sheets has done well when he's in there. I wrote when in the early stages after the trade deadline that there was some thought in the clubhouse, not like griping, not a big deal, but like, man, Gavin Sheets could work well here, and it's a shame he's not getting that opportunity. That's called a good team, guys. That's called a good team. There's going to be guys that, quote unquote, should be playing that aren't playing. So Ryan O'Hearn absolutely makes this a deeper lineup and a better bench.
Yep, and it helps when Gavin Sheets can hit a little. He must have set a San Diego Padres record 2 nights ago for longest continuous smile in the dugout. He sure seems to be enjoying the fact that he's playing better, that they're playing better. Just seems like a neat guy, kind of top to bottom.
I liked him before, and I liked what he brought to this team, but I liked him as a person. I liked him as a piece on the team, as a pro, and he has handled this as well, and I think as genuinely as possible. But bottom line, everybody wants to play. And so playing and contributing, man, absolutely feels good when you got, what, 2 plate appearances for 10 days? And then you're in, and then over the course of almost a week here, you're contributing in a meaningful way in meaningful games. I mean, let's not forget he was sprung from purgatory of the White Sox. So not only is he performing, his team is performing now, and Gavin Sheets does seem to be very happy.
Yeah, Kevin, it's a good thing I don't do your job, because if it were me, I'd be down there asking every former White Sox and every former A what it's like to be in the big leagues finally, especially after the way things have gone here the last couple of years for those two franchises. I think, you know, we may look back at this season when it's all said and done and look at that Giants series, something where, you know what, Nick Pivetta stopped the bleeding. The Padres didn't play great, but they played well enough to beat a bad team. My dad used to say, Kevin, that good teams find ways to win, but bad teams find ways to lose. I think we saw that a little bit yesterday with the Giants. When things are going well, like they have been most of the year for the Padres, days like yesterday happen, and the opposite's true. When you're the Giants, Casey Schmidt throws a ball up the line, and all of a sudden it's game over, you lose.
And the way the Padres respond, and then so what they talk about wanting to play every opponent the same, they want to do that to the Dodgers too. Look, the Dodgers aren't the greatest defensive team. They're they have 3 of the top 9 hitters in the National League. They have their third play, or their 2 guys tied for second place in home runs have 21, which is the same as the Padres leader. They're hitting again, by the way, as a lineup. They're getting some guys back, I think, soon. I don't know if this weekend or not. Their pitching is back. They're a really, really good team. If the Padres play the same way as they did against the Giants, they could take 2 or 3. They could sweep the Dodgers. They could find a way to score runs. In that inning yesterday, look, they need to hit more home runs. They do, all right? When I say need, could they still win the World Series or whatever without popping anymore? Okay, guess they could. It's not ideal. But in that 6-run inning yesterday, they took an extra base, as in first to third, second to home. Gosh, Cronenworth's case was it first to home. They took an extra base on 4 different plays. They had 2 bunt hits, a sacrifice bunt. They had, 1 double, 2 run scoring singles, a sacrifice fly, a stolen base. Mm-hmm. That's quite an inning, and it creates 6 runs. Of course, there were 2 errors on 1 play. Well, that's what happens a lot of times when you are forcing things. I forget the stat now, and I actually haven't looked it up in a while, but the Padres are right up there in scoring, like with the Brewers, with other good teams. You score a lot when the other team screws up. Mm-hmm. It's what you do.
Makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, one of the stats of theirs that I love is how many times they've stolen third base this year. Taking advantage of it. Happened yesterday, I believe it was Tatis stealing third. Now, this is a team, even when they're up, you know, if there's less than two outs, a guy on second base, they are going to try to steal third base. I know it's a little old school. I know that there's a segment of the fan base that rolls their eyes at all the bunting. But you know what? Taking extra bases, forcing the defense to play bad baseball. That's a terrible phrase. You know what I mean? Forcing the issue, making the other team make plays. I mean, that's timeless stuff. You know, that's how you win in this game.
That is, it is. It does remind me of Little League, which was kind of fun to watch as an adult, and kind of, you know, like, oh my gosh, these guys will get better. You know, that one coach, you know, coached his team up. He's like Mike Schilt out there, and they knew how to exploit every mistake, right? Like, you're in that right now with your kids, right? Right?
Yes.
Like,
yes, you know, I know that guy. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, come on. But oh my gosh, it's worked for the Padres. Like, I was looking it up last night, and it's too early to say it because they're – okay, so they have 34 games remaining. Mm-hmm. They have already won 71 games, right? Mm-hmm. This is 72. 71. Something like 93 last year. That's 164 games. Go ahead and go back. With 34 games remaining in this season, go ahead and look back in Padres history how many times they've won – 164 games back-to-back seasons. Now, that's not what you strive for, to be better than your crappy past, but it's pretty darn good. You got 34 games remaining. Also, like, how many teams win 164? Any team now, 164 in back-to-back? I mean, what I'm saying is 34 games remaining. This could well, by the end, be the best back-to-back regular seasons in Padres history.
I will whisper this to you, and then we'll move on to a different topic. Kevin, this is the golden age of Padres baseball. People don't know it, but it is.
And again,
the last 4 years,
five.
Golden age of Padres baseball.
If you go back to 2020, so we're talking 6 years, right? Going to make the playoffs for a fourth year, almost certainly, out of six. You blew the other two. That you could look at that both positively and negatively. Believe me, for all people out there scoffing, there are people that look at 2021 and 23, Padres fans, longtime Padres fans, that look as those years as like positives almost, right? I'm not saying I agree with them because like now your expectations, you know, are higher, right? But like it is the goal. We can shout it. I did a story with graphics where I did the research and a couple different graphics and you in terms of both playoff success relative to other teams in the last 6 years and the Padres' success relative to their lack of success in the past. And you can't hold a candle really to this period of Padres baseball. Again, your sights are now trying to become the Dodgers, right? Mm-hmm. Your sights are now trying to become a championship winning team and a perennial playoff team. That's your sights, but you know, we should probably live with some perspective as well.
Yeah. A little perspective is not a bad thing. And, you know, speaking of perspective, I think heading into this series, the Padres have a little bit of a different one than they had a week ago. You wrote about it in today's Padres Daily. You know, a week ago, everybody was excited. Like, hey, you got a one game lead in the division heading into three games at Dodger Stadium. There is an excitement of let's go here. Right. It seems to me, and maybe, Kevin, we just caught these guys on a different kind of day. It seems like that approach has completely shifted in the span of a week to, you know what, it's just three games. Let's see how it goes. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think I like the way that you phrased it and your kind of tone in it. It was all very correct. I don't want to overstate it. Like they were like, yeah, we're going to storm the castle and, you know, pillage the land and there will be nothing left of the Dodgers. And this is our World Series. Because honestly, I think that's how some in the media and fans in Los Angeles kind of take it when the Padres talk about it being, a big series. And it's like, no, they were just talking about how like it's for first place and the division and all that, and they would like to get the bye. But yes, there has been a shift to a certain extent of maybe a re-emphasizing of the of what they've really done well to live by since, I would say, early in the Mike Schilt tenure, about a third of the way through last season. It started to sink into them. Every series the same. You can look at that. Sometimes it feels like, man, these guys are making the Rockies at home in April seem like really big. Or they're downplaying the Dodgers, right? But whatever. And Mike Schilt can speak very actually eloquently on this. It's one of his big things, which is just every day the same. Now, that sounds like a cliche. Well, yes. But if you live it and put it into practice, it's pretty impressive. And I think that's what the Padres have done. They were up for that Dodgers series. They'll be up for this one. But as much as humanly possible, I do think they do a really good job of making every series the same. Does it always look like it? No. Do they always do it? No. But yeah, I think there was, to your point. And yeah, I went off a little bit. But to your point, there was an emphasis, I believe, on, hey, we're the Padres. Like, if we play this way, remember how we've said and we believe that if we play this way, we'll beat anyone or we'll have a good chance, as Mike Schilt said, to shake hands? Mm-hmm. That's what we're going to do here. Boom. That's it.
I had this thought last Sunday, Kevin, when they got swept. And I think that getting swept instead of merely taking one out of three was a big deal there. I sort of had the thought last Sunday, like, gosh, I wonder when the next time the Padres are going to get a chance like this is. And this is why baseball is great. They took only three of four from the Giants. They did not sweep the Giants. But because of what happened in Colorado, the Padres now have a chance to overtake the Dodgers again this weekend. It's a one. The Dodgers have a one-game lead heading into a three-game series. Is this the playoffs? No, it is not the playoffs. But this is a second chance for them, I think, to continue that momentum a little bit, to sort of, it's a litmus test against a good team, Kevin. The people have been reporting about the Dodgers' premature death for 5 or 6 years. It's a darn good team, and they get another chance to play them this weekend.
It's great, man. I mean, come on. And this is what's great. And I got to remind myself, rather than trying to change people, that this is just what my email box will be. You know, of course the Dodgers were going to go to Colorado and sweep them. And the Padres were going to be four games back or whatever by now. Well, that didn't happen. That will not keep anyone. It won't keep me from assuming what's going to happen next week, right? Like, we're just wrong, guys. We're just wrong more often than we're right. Let's just, you know, let's go ahead and keep having fun making these predictions and all that. But let's just remember, like, the world is messy, man. And the baseball is a cruel, cruel mistress. And like, and a fun one too. That's what mistresses are about. But that's, it's just, that's what it is, man. And how awesome is that? That on Monday, I guess the Rockies lost too. So it was like, oh, okay. Or, I mean, the Dodgers lost at the Rockies too, but like the Dodgers lost and then the Padres won the next three and the Dodgers only took two of three. It's like, wow, they're only a game back. Like, how fun is that? That's great. Now, here we are. These next three games are going to be insane, man. Off the field as much as on, like the crowds, it's going to be wild.
Yeah. You know, a quick perspective adjustment here too, Kevin. Had I said to you in February and March that the Padres and Giants would be playing at Petco Park in late August, the Padres could overtake the Dodgers for the National League West. I think you would wonder who AJ Preller had traded for early in the season or something like that. To be as close is a testament to not only how I think the Padres are overachieving relative to expectations, the Dodgers have come back to earth relative to expectations. It's huge. It's huge.
I do. And what I will say is at the end of the year, if for a second straight year, the Padres have let the Dodgers, and when I say this, I mean the end of the postseason, because I'm not, you know, whatever. Winning the division would be huge, but, you know, the postseason is what it's about. If once again, like, the Padres let a weird year, an injury-filled year for the Dodgers get past them, look, the Dodgers have built-in advantages based on the money that they have. All credit to them building their system as well, and being able to run guys in and out and stuff. But last year, injuries. This year, injuries. Padres should have taken advantage last year, should take advantage this year. Maybe that time has passed, or not, but they're in position to do it. And so I will say that will be one of the disappointing aspects if they can't take advantage of this.
Yep, absolutely, that they would have their chance and then miss it. Let's go over some pitching here, Kevin. Padres now are very left-handed with both Gavin Sheets and Ryan O'Hearn in the lineup. So naturally, because this is baseball, they get to face a hard-throwing lefty tonight in Blake Snell. 3-1 with an ERA of 1.80, has not pitched much this year at all, but somebody who we're all very familiar with has a 1.69 ERA in 3 starts since returning from a shoulder injury. He goes up against Yu Darvish, has a 5.14 ERA this month, struggled against the Dodgers last weekend, is particularly in the first inning. Again, another just fascinating pitching matchup for me, at least.
Yeah, Yu doesn't make the same mistake twice against the team. You know, not that we have a whole bunch of, you know, even for Yu, as long in the tooth as he is, you don't get that opportunity very much. But Yu will be much better today. Interesting to see what the Padres get on base early if they try to challenge Blake Snell, who they were challenging just as much as they were Will Smith last week, because Blake is not good at holding runners. But you remember that, where they were like, well, we're facing Blake Snell, we're not going to get a lot of hits, let's try to make something happen. And Will Smith, boom, 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 cut down 3 runners. So that'll be interesting. But yeah, this is a great, man, there's a couple good matchups this week.
Absolutely. Let's go to Saturday. Tyler Glasnow, 1-1, 3.12 ERA. 2.50 ERA after the All-Star break, going up against Nestor Cortez. Now is when I recommend that you go to our website and read Annie Heilbrun's Q&A with Nestor Cortez. Really interesting. Seems like a really interesting dude with a great backstory. Helps that he's, I think, fun to watch pitch, even though his numbers, 1-2 with a 5.87 ERA in 3 starts, aren't exactly great. Somebody who has, I don't know, veteran guy going up against Glasnow. I think it's a coin toss kind of game on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, you would give the edge over there. The Padres are seeing Glasnow for the second time. Yeah, this could go. Nestor Cortez could get crushed. Nestor Cortez has been a very good pitcher who has made some good pitches with the Padres and, you know, given them a chance to win a couple times, not another. I mean, I would definitely give the edge to Glasnow, but we just spent a lot of time talking about how baseball's funny.
Yes, it is. And appointment television Sunday, I think. Yoshinobu Yamamoto against Padres ace Nick Pivetta. That's huge. If that's for the series, if that's for the Padres pulling even with the Dodgers in the standings, as opposed to being down, what would that be then, 3?
Depending on.
That's really fun as pitching matchups go.
Yeah, well, we can make that huge. There'll be 31 games to go, but you're dang right. We're going to make that huge if that's for, pulling even, if that's for all the marbles for that day. Absolutely. Now, look, Yamamoto's been great. If you go ahead and check out the National League rankings, he and Nick Pivetta right there. I think Nick Pivetta's 9th in ERA, 1.8 something. And then Nick leads the league in batting average allowed and whip. I think whip along with Wheeler, but like Yamamoto's up there as well. That is just a great matchup. And the Padres have beat the Dodgers twice this year, 2 out of 10 games. And one of them was started by Yamamoto. So
yep.
There you go.
I still think of his first start when they were in Korea, right? He made his major league debut there against the Padres, and the Padres beat him, didn't they?
They beat him bad. He didn't know what he was doing. They knew what he was doing. I still think of game 5 of the NLDS.
Yeah.
Scoreless.
Five scoreless. Yeah, you're right. The more recent one. No, this is big. And again, I think starting pitching is big. You know, the big takeaway, and I think the red flag after last weekend was the Padres starters couldn't get out of the first inning. Yeah. If it wasn't for Fernando Tatis Jr. Pulling a ball back in this Giants series, the first inning might still have been a problem for them. But you know what? 3 veteran guys this weekend. You would like to think that we wouldn't see a repeat given just who the guys are who are pitching Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah, here's who, you know, again, I don't think you, I think you bounce back. You never know what you're going to get from Snell, though. Big Snell guy. Big Snell guy. Love Snell. Loved Snell when he was here throwing five shutout innings every week. Yes, that was the big takeaway. To me, it's still the big concern, starting pitching for this team. Yeah. Though they, what they did at the trade deadline has allowed you to go, okay. And then if you take a look, by the way, at what the playoffs are scheduled like this year, you can get through series with three starting pitchers. And then with the Padres bullpen, you're giving the bullpen with those days off, extra days as well. Like, the postseason might not be as big a problem as the Padres starting pitching is making us think it could be, but I'm very concerned about starting pitching. And that doesn't mean I don't think this starting pitching could be great. Look at the names on there and look at what they've done. But Michael King needs to come back and be Michael King, right? Mm-hmm. When are we going to stop thinking Dylan Cease is going to be Dylan Cease on any sort of consistent basis, right? What has Yu Darvish done this year? These are questions, and they're the kind of questions we should be asking about a team that has a chance to go to the World Series and win the World Series.
Absolutely. The questions we ask change, Kevin, as situations change. If this is a championship caliber club, these are questions that championship caliber clubs face, right? Which is, tell me who your three starters are for the postseason. Kevin, I can name one guy who I'm pretty sure will get the ball in game one, assuming everything lines up. The other two, I think that there's still so much to be determined in the next month.
Right. And then the other thing the Padres did at the trade deadline was give themselves a chance to score more. Mm-hmm. And they have. There have been some clunkers, but okay, everyone does that. Because if you take a look at what the Dodgers did last year with where they had like one starter and then maybe a second and then maybe a third, but they were doing it with their bullpen. They were also scoring the heck out of the game. They were scoring. They were hitting home runs. That's how they got through, especially the last two rounds of the playoffs, was with their offense. And so they were more offensive than most playoff teams. But if you take a look, as much as we put the emphasis on Mike Schilt ball in the playoffs, you still got to score. I've started to have like all of my thinking, or a lot of my thinking, as they're 4.5 games clear of the Mets right now. And like, I've had a lot of my thinking just like, okay, so what does this mean for the playoffs? Okay. Okay. When a guy makes a mistake here, how will they address that in the playoffs? Okay. How will teams challenge this guy in the playoffs? And I'm missing, 90% of stuff. I mean, it's what the Padres and other teams that feel like they're going to be in the playoffs, what they're thinking about right now. They're having meetings on how do pitchers line up? How do we work on this? So it's a very, very exciting time of the year.
Yep. Do you piggyback guys? Do you hand it over to your stellar bullpen in like the third inning? Is Craig Stammen going to walk through that door and start a playoff game for you out of the bullpen? Who knows? Who knows? Kevin, I put you on the spot at the end of every episode, and today is no different. This is one of my favorite topics, but I'm going to let you talk. The Padres tonight are going to wear their City Connect jerseys. After tonight, they will wear them two more times because they wear them at home on Fridays, and then they go away forever. Will you miss them?
I don't get too worked up about these things. I would love to hear your opinion. I wasn't aware this was one of your favorite topics.
Oh, I have thought.
They've grown on me. I think it's hilarious that that Nike came up with this, because if you fully buy into the idea that this was about the cross-cultural, vibrant San Diego, Mexico scene and the sunset, rather than, hey, those are three really freaking cool colors that we can sell. And guess what? They were right. And that's what I love. I remember when people ripping those all-star uniforms from 2021, they were just weird, like playing for the Rockies when the Rockies hosted.
Yeah.
Man, for a while, I saw a lot of people wearing those. It's weird. Yeah. Yeah. And Nike baseball, kind of know what they're doing sometimes. Will I miss them? Yes, because they are so weird and so out there. And like, another thing to remember, like they did, is I just busted on the whole cross-cultural thing. The Latin players, if you want to see what they wear off the field, there's some, especially the Miami guys, There's some really loud pastels or whatever you call those colors. So yeah, I'm going to miss them. I happen to know what the new ones are approximately going to look like, and I can't talk about those, but so I'm factoring that in too. Will I miss these over what the new ones are? I don't know. We'll see. Go ahead, Ryan. Why is this such a thing in the Finley household?
It's probably because I have kids, and they gravitate to that stuff. It's as if the Nike people knew exactly what a 9-year-old would ask you for in the team shop. And you look at that and you go, but that's $52. And they go, yeah, I know. You know, it's there's that. So yep. I sort of instinctively, I rank the day the Padres brought back the Brown as a top 5 day in Padres franchise history.
Amen.
Which says more about the franchise than it does about the move. I love the Brown. I think it's distinctive. I love that they don't look like the Brewers or the Dodgers or fill in the blank anymore. I think it's tied to actual Friars and the mission, and that's great. I'm in. This is such a fun departure from the Brown, which is, I think, great and historic, but borderline serious. It's a little serious for me.
Your dad dressing up for work. Yep.
Yep. Huh? I love the Brown. I love that this is a fun departure. And you know, I have no real pre-qualifications for the next City Connect jerseys, which we'll see next year. But my goodness, I hope they're fun. And my goodness, I hope that they're bright or different. Because I know that for, you know, the 3 kids I got at home, if we walk through, say, a sporting goods store, the stuff they're grabbing for is City Connect stuff, more so than anything that's brown and yellow. And while I die a little inside when they do that, I get it, because it's fun. And the stuff that they wear now is great, but it's not. Life. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And when I see, and this I've been saying I'm going to do this story for years, when I'm in other cities, and it's several times in every single city, where I see the parents, they're a family walking together, and the parents are in the home team's jersey, and the kids are in either most often a Merrill or Tatis jersey of the Padres, 7 to 8 times out of 10, that is a Merrill or Tatis City Connect jersey.
City Connect jersey. Yep, absolutely. That's part of the uniform, man.
That tells you. Yes. By the way, I just jotted down, just top of the head, 6 Padres top 5 moments, 6 candidates. And I got to say that while you are correct that the idea that you and I would think that bringing back the Brown was a top 5 franchise moment, I'm going to say they're going to have to win at least 2 World Series to knock that out of my top 5.
Yeah.
So it is kind of sad that the color, but number one, that's iconic and it's a beautiful. And so it's going to take some championships to knock, in my opinion, that's going to take some championships to knock that November night in 2019 out of the top 5.
Absolutely. What I love too about that is when they first unveiled those jerseys, the sort of company line was that the Padres would wear brown on the road every game, and that the pinstripe would be the sand pinstripe would be kind of a one-off, kind of fun. And the players, my understanding, the players loved the sand pinstripe so much that they wear that all the time. If you want to talk about the most distinctive, maybe not the best, but if you want to talk about the most distinctive jersey in baseball, a sand-colored pinstripe uniform is nothing if not distinct.
It really is, and that's beautiful. And we've talked about this 1,000 times, but this speaks to the fact that I'm enjoying this conversation. Speaks to the wonderfulness of these uniforms and the history of these uniforms. Is you know, when I was either working in LA after growing up here or covering the NFL and be, let's say, at a bar in not that I did that all the time. I'm just saying sometimes you are on the road covering the Chargers or what have you. And you look up and you're like, is that my team? Is that the Brewers? What's happening? Like you didn't know it was the Padres, right? Or the fans. Like if the Padres had been popular and a big road draw back in the day, we wouldn't have known it as much as we know now because right. People show up in brown. It's just it's going to take a couple, not just one, It's going to take a couple championships to knock that out of being a top five moment in franchise history, bringing back the Brown.
I will go 84-98, Tony Gwynn's 3,000th hit, Joe Musgrove's no-hitter, and bringing back the Brown, to me, are sort of four and five in no particular order.
Yeah, I have seven now okay. Because shame on me. I forgot Joe's no-hitter. I was there, and it was and remains. But I was trying to go back and beat you because you're the historian of this team. I was going back ways to try to beat you. But now you have – I have a couple 84 moments, so I could then narrow them down if we're just going general. And then I have Gwynn, Hoffman, the saves. You know, we could probably come up with 10 things and put a poll out and see what people thought.
I bet you Brown would finish in the top three. I don't think we're alone in this. I think most fans.
Virtual guarantee.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin, we've gone over, but for good reason, Padres-Dodgers three-game series, Petco Park, starting tonight, 6:40 p.m. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.